Hello and welcome to a special episode of podcasting as we come together for a special tribute episode to a local podcaster here in the city of Sacramento. I am joined at this table. My name is Eddie. I am the host of the Film Philosophers, and I am joined at this table with several other staple podcast hosts. And we've just decided to come together and kind of talk about some of the great times and really just share what Curtis Lee Fisher Jr. Meant to us. Curtis was a really big part of not only the area here in Sacramento, but he was also a huge facet to the podcast community. And we couldn't think of another better way to honor the man than to just jump on these microphones and put on the cans and just talk about them and put it out there for the world to hear. So with me to my right is intern for the Filmlosophers as well as co-host for the Capeless Crusaders podcast, Amy.
Yes, that's me still.
Yes, that is her.
That's still me. Yeah, you gave me my intro, so I have no intro, but I'm going to pass it to the man to my right. I would say the man who needs no introduction, but he's also across the table. And I'm going to leave you for your intro because he took mine.
I would actually prefer if you introduced me.
All right. All right. The man, the myth, the legend. Oh, yeah. What's up, pizzas? VGB OG. Corey.
What's up, pizzas? Nice. How's it going, everybody? It's not fair because I haven't podcasted in like a year.
No.
But
you
this was an event to pull me out of my cave because
that and Super Mario Brothers.
Mm.
That and Super Mario Brothers.
The two things.
But
are the two things.
That's it.
But, I mean, we'll get into it. Yeah. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Let's just continue the intros. I'm really out of practice.
Hey.
I feel like I'm ruining the whole show.
Are you kidding? We have yet to begun to defile ourselves. To his right, we have also one of the co-hosts for the Capeless Crusaders, David Doc Barry.
Allegedly. Also retired for a little while. Also putting on the boots. But I can't lie. Something I heard today made me think it might be time to strap him the hell up. But we'll talk about that later. To my right.
Just when he thought he could get up. They're pulling him back in.
That's yep. Dude, that's, I had three kids done. To get away from you guys, and that apparently wasn't enough.
No, you needed one more.
And one more Capeless Crusader for you to listen to, possibly the more annoying one. This is the Azorian one, Anthony Steve.
Manderson's one? Oh, what?
Oh, hey, got you, Manderson.
Zing.
If you're listening to this, Manderson, we love you. Like I said, we decided today we had a really emotional day, and we had an opportunity to say farewell to our good friend. And like I said, as we were talking about it, myself and Corey actually kind of came up with the idea to just sit at the table and talk about, you know, how much of an impact Curtis had, not only in our podcasting career, but also in our personal lives. I mean, there's people here at this table that have known him for in the years of teens, like, you know, long enough. There's people who have known him for at least 5-6 years. I honestly, at this table, I could probably say that I'm the one who's known him the least. But the greatest thing about Curtis is that it didn't matter if you knew him for 6 months or 12 years. Every single time, he made it seem like it was a lifelong friendship. And so that's what we're going to dive into today. We're going to talk about it. We're going to kind of get into where Curtis fell within our lives and landed and became the angel that he was in life, as well as, you know, in his passing. But I think the first thing I want to talk about with you guys is I want to talk about funny stories, because the thing is, and mind you, this episode's going to probably get a little hairy with conversations and the stories we got. But there's always these great times. Every time you spent time with Curtis, there was always something funny to happen. There was always, I mean, he was just a natural, joyful, boisterous guy. It didn't matter if you were talking about the most serious of comic books or talking about like the dismal, you know, video games that were coming out at the time, or talking about movies that aren't the same as they used to be. And, you know, we needed more practical effect work and things like that. He always found a way to turn the conversation from a negative to a positive. And so I wanted to kind of throw that out to the table. Did anybody have a really great positive story that you wanted to recollect and talk about with them?
There's so many numerous moments. One moment I can think of I brought up earlier today was we were setting up for a recording of The Crusaders at Empire's Comics Vault. And one way or another, we brought up this scene from Judge Dredd. It's in the finale with Sylvester Stallone and one of the, you know, legendary actors, Armand Desante, who puts emphasis on his words. Yes. We were all so infatuated with this moment of Stallone saying, you broke the law. And Armand Desante, and we would just repeat that law line because it felt like Armand Desante's mouth like went like the mummy and dropped down lower than it could.
Like a freaking snake, it unhinged its jaws and just like, law.
I just recall us for like a half an hour while we're setting up for the episode just saying law randomly. And Barry was saying it, Piper was saying it, Curtis, Amy, we're all just saying law for no reason.
I looked confused because at that time I had never seen Ginger and I was like, what is going on? And they're like, law. And
it's like,
each
you,
other.
Yes.
It was a good 20 minutes.
You say, you just bring up Judge Dredd, and that's the first thing I'm thinking of. And I love Judge Dredd.
It's, oh, yeah, absolutely.
It's a fantastic, but that moment is just Armand Desante showing the thespian chops and then Curtis repeating it anytime.
We'd always have to wonder why it took so long to set up for a freaking show. And that's why.
It makes sense now.
Always. Just, like first off, we didn't have, you know, a spot to leave our equipment. We would just like always, we try to leave tape on the floor. Be like, this is what we'll set up next week. Never the same spot.
That's why there was always tape on the floor.
Always a masking tape. Just like, oh yeah, this is, that's not where it is now. But like it was always something like that. We'd start setting up and then we'd start screwing around. And it would be an hour later, and we might maybe about to mic check, but it never felt. I mean, there were some times where we're like, shit, we got to get going, but they always just like, especially during that time when it was like the golden age, really, like when we were just, you know, Curtis was rocking it on the mic and behind the mic, or behind the camera, and it was just
laughter.
God, he was like, you said it today, like his laugh,
yeah.
Just
iconic.
The best. Like, yeah. if I said something, whether we were recording or not, and I got just like the out of him, like, I was like, God, like, that's gold. Like,
you could have a bad day Curtis's laugh made you laugh.
It was that ha, and then the snicker with his face crunch. The snicker was the best.
Yeah, and he'd be silently doing the snicker, and he'd just be
nodding from the back of the table.
We'd say something, like, we try to get him to break. We were like, you know, we were always, when he was, especially when he was behind the camera, and he's like, all right, everyone, shut up. Like, everyone, we are in cinema mode, and we'd be trying to get him to laugh back there and get a mic to pick it up, and it was it was so much fun. It was
I just thought when I did the John Cena rap about Shazam,
he couldn't hold it.
You heard him laugh two or three
times. Whole time he was trying so hard to not lose it.
Oh my gosh.
That one, I'm happy, is on YouTube. You can look that up. That's on it. You can hear Curtis laughing in the background.
If you want to listen to Curtis's courtesy laugh, you can go to the VGB. Quite a few episodes where basically me and him shared a lot of similar comedic stylings.
Yeah.
And a lot of that terrible meta humor where things are kind of intentionally meant to not be funny. You know, mainly just to piss off Aaron and Emma and the rest of them. But it helps when one person laughs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Skip was that guy. That laugh, just to help my bits not completely die.
Nothing fall flat with Curtis.
And it would almost be a challenge where I'd try and make it more annoying and less funny just to see if I can get Skip not to laugh. But the guy would just laugh for me because he knew I needed it. You know? So
no awkward silence.
Thankful for him because he just got it. You know, he didn't have to spell it out. Like, I really think, looking back at those episodes, Aaron and Emma and the rest of them probably hated me for those things because they didn't get my art.
It was always interesting because, like, watching those episodes and you'd be just going on like this meta tangent of like,
or a theme song that lasts like legit 3 minutes of like dolphin noises, you know, like,
and everyone else is like, Aaron's like,
why the fuck am I doing this podcast?
Him in his deep voice, like, and then Emma's like, wait, what? It was always,
No, I think when we're going back to any of the recordings, one of the first recordings I actually interned on, because I always intern for a podcast, was actually with the Caveless Crusaders when I switched over from Crack in the Vault. And it was it the 50th?
That's
where you had everybody?
Crack in the Vault.
Yes. Y'all don't think that I've been here long enough. It's okay.
The 50th was
how old are we?
There were children born in this era. It's fine.
The 50th is our Last Supper setup.
It was the Last Supper. On the one side. But the thing was, we were in Kurt's garage. Uh-huh. and he refused to let me help set up. Mm-hmm. Like, he's like, you can put the microphones on the table. Don't plug them in. Mm-hmm. Don't plug them in till I'm ready. And then you had Bart and Malik in the background, and everyone's like trying to turn cameras. And I remember being squished up against some Christmas decorations, trying to turn the camera so that I could see all of you guys. And I just swear, it got so dang hot in that.
He refused to open the garage until we were done.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there was no fans. And we're all just we're sitting there suffering. And I'm watching everybody. I'm like, it's so hot. Yeah. It's so hot. And the look was like, don't you do it. Yeah. Don't you do it.
He would not sacrifice for quality.
Never.
I mean, I was running a rinky-dink little circus. But like bringing him on board automatically upped everything that I thought I knew to a better level. And he did it in not just podcasting and with us. Like, it's in everything he did. Mm-hmm. He would tell, and no role was too small for him. Like, he was really into his church, if you guys, you know, listeners don't know. And he was really, like, you know, you get like, oh, Christians. Yeah. I worked in Christian radio for years, so I can say that.
Two of you.
I was Catholic, so I can say that. Yeah. Yeah.
Same. I mean, you know, and there's a judginess. And like, for as adamant as he was and true to his faith and strong in his beliefs, he never made you feel like an outcast.
No,
ever.
But he wouldn't also hide who he was. I know a lot of those people too, who they go to church and then when they get with people, they act out of character. Mm-hmm. With Curtis, you got him in every setting, whether he was at a Kings game, whether he was at work, whether he's at a birthday party, whether he was always himself and true and never a facade. And I respect that. And there's no role too small, because at his church, we know what he's capable of. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You've seen him build entire studios. Mm-hmm. His home streaming setup was the best I've ever seen. I work with professional gamers and content creators all the time who pay people thousands of dollars to have what Curtis set up himself. And at his church, he was doing base level stuff. Like, he was like a camera operator or something. And I was like, Curtis, like, you know, why aren't you throwing your weight around, doing more? And it just, he was a mature enough to understand that, you know, there's no small roles, and he was where he needed to be, where he felt he was, and he'll let you fail, and then he's always there to pick you back up.
Yeah. He was the Christian that other Christians preach or claim to be. He actually was that Christian.
You want to talk about teaching, like any teachable moment. Like, for God's sake, the guy showed me how to take good pictures on my phone. Like, that was, he took a moment to teach me the rule of thirds. He's like, let's talk about photography. And I'm like, cool. I have no idea what the hell you're talking about. Let's do it. Like, I just take crappy pictures on my phone. And he's like, and he taught me the rule of thirds while we were driving to a convention. And I was like, that makes so much sense. And then everything I would do when I would try to line up a shot when he was off the show, and I tried to line up a shot on my crappy little webcam, I'm like, rule of thirds. Like, I remember what Curtis taught me. Yeah. And it's just like that. Like, everything. It's like, I've never met anyone who was a jack of all trades and then also a master of all trades. Like, there was no trade-off. Yeah. Everything that he did was, he just made better.
And he made it accessible to people. Yeah. Like, he didn't lord it over you to be like, oh, you don't know how to do that.
It's a hard thing to do, not be condescending when you're so much better at everybody.
Exactly. Like, with everything. Like, I'm a huge fan of, obviously, movies. I love movies, and I love talking about movies. And, you know, surprise, I know. But talking to him, and he would mention things like, he would talk about Spike Lee movies. He would talk about movies that use certain lighting and certain things, and the meaning behind it, and the intentionality behind it, and his eye for like things that normal people don't usually see. It was like, oh yeah, well, so when he does this, or when Martin Scorsese does this, or when James Cameron decides this, it's meaning this, and it does these things. And he would talk about it like he had been doing it for ages. Like, I sit in press screenings with other critics who have been film critics for the city of Sacramento, for the Bay Area, for Northern California for almost 30, 40 years. And I've talked with them about what they see in films and stuff like that. He had the same aura, if you will, of those people who have been just screening movies and understanding like the complexity of it. Like, it was somebody just explaining the ABCs. Mm-hmm. He knew it. And not once did he ever like make me feel personally that my knowledge was not enough. Mm-hmm. He would always be like, oh yeah, that's really cool, man. You know what? And also blah, blah, blah. And he would make it accessible to me. He goes, so when you see this, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, cool. That makes sense. Yeah, man. So next time, you know, we should go in this and made it like a nice thing. Like, mm-hmm. oh yeah, cool. Yeah. But all his knowledge, too, was just always accessible in terms of like, oh, you don't know how to do this? All right, fine. Here, let me show you this. Let's go through it together and we'll get it figured out. We had ran into an old fan of the show for VGB today. He goes by the moniker Ogre. He's a big old guy.
He's a big boy.
He's a big boy.
He's a teddy bear.
Yeah, he's such a teddy bear. He was a lot larger and then he started working out and stuff like that. Got a little bit thinner, but he was saying that he kind of got pushed to taking care of himself because Skip had sent him text message and told him, you know, you can do it and this and that. But also he was talking about how when he started streaming, he was like, he didn't understand this, he didn't understand that, he didn't understand why he was getting this feedback or that. And so he reached out to Curtis on Twitter. And Curtis called him and was like, all right, so what's going on? And he said, well, you know, I'm doing that. He goes, okay, let's go over it. Let's talk about it. Let's see what we can figure out. Let's get you set up. And he goes, and he just sat with me on the call for about an hour, hour and a half. And we went through my entire setup. We fixed it. And my stuff sounds good now. He goes, it sounds great. And it was because of that one phone call. He gave up an hour and a half of his day to sit with me on the phone just to show me how to do things better.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, and the thing is, I don't know the relationship they had prior to that. I don't know if they were close or even on.
I think it was just a few VGB Christmas parties.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Cause I was like, I was talking to him. I'm like, man, it's been a while. When's the last time I saw you? It's probably a party. And I go, probably pre COVID party, but yeah. Mm. And he goes, but yeah, he goes, I messaged him out of the blue. He asked for my number. He called me and he fixed it. You know,
He didn't waste time. He didn't put time into nobody who didn't either want it or want to feel like it would be constructive.
Yeah.
You know, so like anyone who wanted to learn and he could sense if you had a passion and he could add to that, he definitely would. Like we would just spend hours, you know, he tried because, you know, I try to do things and give up, but to be a DJ.
Yeah,
I was like, man, I wish I could be a DJ. And of course, Curtis is like, oh, I was a DJ for like 30 years. Mm-hmm. And then he pulls out an app on his iPad and starts showing me how to DJ. And he'd give me a homework assignment. And then he would come back. Did you work on that transition?
on the film set, as much as we would nerd out to Christopher Nolan movies, mm-hmm. David Fincher was one of his favorite all-time directors. There are videos that show the way Fincher directs things that are out there now. I learned that from Curtis before those YouTube videos existed where he showed me how Fincher follows this character with the camera. The camera follows this, follows that. Not every character in this movie gets that. This character gets that.
Yeah.
Watch how the car moves. This is stuff like when I later saw those YouTube videos that came out later, I'm like, this is what I learned from Curtis. Curtis told me what David Fincher does. He caught that before I ever did.
I mean, like I said, he just had that eye. And I don't know if he just was naturally gifted or he put the time into it to learn it.
He put the time into a lot of things. Yeah. I mean, there was like, when he deep dove, he would dive. Let's be very honest. Y'all know way more about Prince than you probably would have ever expected. Mm-hmm. I mean, he told me about the salaciousness of the scandalous suite that Prince put together for the Batman movie. That was some sketchy sounds up in there. And he had uncuts. Mm-hmm. He had stuff where Crystal Ball hadn't been released, but it was available on CD-ROM. And he would just talk extensively. Like, there was more information where I'm like, oh, yeah, if you're listening to this song, this is what Prince was trying to do in this, and this is that type of transition, and you can hear echoes of this song and this, and like you're like, oh my gosh. And it wasn't just like a one and done. It was like one of those things where he meditated in it, like he marinated. Mm-hmm. And then he's like, okay, who else is coming in? And you're mm-hmm. like, me, I think.
And along those lines, if you introduce something to him, like when I would bring up a random wrestling moment, and I'd show him it, he'd be like, whoa. And then he'd go in depth and find out what led to that moment in wrestling, what happened after that match.
And the next time you talked to him,
he would text me back about, I saw this too. And like, he's watched three other matches that took place. I'm like, wow. Okay.
He was like the Joker. If like you give him a little inch, he'll take it and just totally do as much as he can with these. Like he not only researched the previous matches, but then the lores that led up to it, the rivalries.
Yep.
And then you're like, hey, did you know that?
And he didn't do it for himself. He did it because he wanted to connect with you.
When he comments back, and I'm like, whoa. people don't usually do this when I show them wrestling stuff. Yeah. And followed up.
But he know you like it, and he likes you, and so he does things to uh-huh. build you up or and to strengthen your relationship. Mm-hmm. That's what was so crazy, especially at his service today, seeing the consistency between all the stories yep. of people yeah. who knew him from when he was in elementary school, people who knew him in his skateboard days, people who knew him in his Blackintosh days, and all the way up to Capeless and VGB and mm-hmm. beyond at his you know most recent church. Everyone came up there and they said the exact same yeah. thing mm-hmm. about how mm-hmm. Curtis was additive to their lives and yeah. wanted to help them. And if they had anything, he'd be there. He'd go help your mom move. Like yeah. just yeah. that. He was that guy.
Yeah.
And that's so hard to come by these days. Yeah. Like there's not very many Curtises. Everybody, a lot of people, I shouldn't say everybody, but feel like they got to tear others down to build themselves up.
Yeah.
Curtis was a rising tide raises all ships type of guy. And we had conversations about that at length. Of just investing in your own community and things that are going on, because that's where people get the most competitive, like Capeless Crusaders and VGB. I'm sure when I first heard about you, I was a dick, and I'm like, oh, yeah, this is competitors in my territory. What's going
you
on?
Did. You want to go, bro?
Yeah, you want to go? You want to compare? Go. How many listeners you got?
80 fans to your 89?
Yeah, yeah. You wanna go? Let's do it. But Curtis with like that the Sacramento Kings Guard. I'm in esports. Yeah. I understand. Like I'm in the esports matrix.
Yeah.
The NBA 2K League is a joke. They have no viewership. They have nothing. I'm sorry. This is a shocker to me. Players are overpaid. Like they, when you watch their streams, they're getting 100 viewers, and yeah. 99 of them are bots, and one is Curtis because he won 2 PlayStations through their like the first person to type something in chat or go to the website and pull this thing. Curtis was in, but he was committed to yeah. liking that team. And when I put a note out on Twitter, kind of you know saying when his service was and what had happened. Kingsguard's players were reaching out and just saying, oh my God, what happened? The Sacramento Kingsguard official account like reached out to see what was going on because they're one fan.
Yeah.
You know how they're going to replace their one fan.
Yeah.
So like he invested in the community and things that a lot of people overlook or thought were insignificant were in his, you know, sphere and his community yeah. and he wanted to see them succeed. So he'd go out to the California State Fair and, you know, interview the guys and gas them up to oblivion.
Yeah.
Computer Booter, Fire Up Game Lounge,
yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oblivion Comics and Coffee, yeah. all these places that were in our sphere, you know, that you could have one opinion of or the other. He understood that he needed to gas them all up
yeah.
and give
yeah.
them all mm-hmm. love. And he would contribute. He'd go run trivia nights and
yeah.
Spend his money there instead of like, you know, Starbucks or whatever, even though yeah. he did like him some Starbucks.
Yeah, but
yeah.
Like, he loved him.
Nobody wasn't important enough for him.
Totally.
Like any sponsor we had, if it was a random ass company, it's like, hey, we want to get on
Tabu Ohana.
Yeah, Tabu Ohana. Yeah.
So you want a beard balm brush?
Yes. Beard balm brush. That's right.
He'll grow a beard.
The dice. Exactly. He's like, he'll do any of it. And the same went for any convention we go to, anyone you want to talk to. Like he knew the big names, but he'd also be like, hey, who's this random person doing like fan artwork? Like
yeah.
he'd gas them all. He'd post their stuff on Instagram. He'd share, he'd join their Discord. Like he would, everything he saw just the positive potential in literally yeah. every situation.
I have at least 2 or 3 pieces of fan art that he acquired.
Yep.
He goes, hey bro, here, take this. I know you like, you know, I know you like comics, or I know you like Batman, or I know you like this. And he'd hand me like real actual pieces of artwork yeah. from these guys. And he'd be like, yeah, they're really cool. You should check them out. And I'm like, oh, mm-hmm. crap. Okay, cool.
Was it you or Curtis that got me the Ramon Villalobos Bernie Sanders?
He got it.
And then he got it signed.
But he got it signed. And yeah. that was the thing, like when we're talking about cons, one of the best memories I can remember were we at Stockton or Lodi Con, Steve's?
Lodi Con.
Where it was me in cosplay, because of course I was like, I'm going to be Arthur Dent. Okay, whatever. I'm walking around in a bathrobe. And Curtis with his bum knee uh-huh. in the brace uh-huh. and you're just like, there's wrestlers outside. I need to go do a promo. And he's like, okay, let's go. And he stood there and let you do the entire thing.
Promo was actually Curtis's idea.
Exactly.
We're out there watching the match, and I'm like, oh, these guys are awesome. And Curtis is like, what if you like interviewed one of them? Let's interview one of them. I'm yeah. like, let's do it. He yeah. gets the camera set up, tripod set up, and it's now me interviewing Aaron Sky and Daniel Torch, SPW performers, And I'm in the middle of their storyline where they like do a, they one kicks the other as I'm interviewing them. And Curtis is like, Curtis made it like slow-mo on YouTube. Yes! Made the kick slow-mo with an added effect to it.
And then he like zoomed, like, and he could work, he worked the camera, but you could tell he was like, yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. We got it here. Mm-hmm. Then we're going to pull back. And you could see at all times his brain was like, how do we make this
again?
How do we make this better?
It had a little bit of wrestling experience, but knew where to set the camera up, mm-hmm. where to have the angle for the kick that was coming. And it was a grand moment.
It was brilliant. And then every con, he always connected with his staples. Like, mm-hmm. we interviewed Ramon on Capeless Crusaders. Mm-hmm. And then Ramon Villalobos is like, hey, Kurt, what's going on? And literally for what, 5 or 6 years, they have mm-hmm. constantly been friends. Kieran Silva, same thing. And Dan Bethel.
Yep.
And then, of course, he met Nick Dragata at a Stockton con. And he's like, I'm in. This is my man.
And it was
this
like,
is my love.
The people he would meet, even if they were celebrities, because of the nature of his personality, they instantly became connected for life. Mm-hmm. Like, you would talk to Curtis and you would be like, yeah, I'm looking for blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. You know, I know so-and-so. Let me reach out. Let me talk to see what I can do. Like, oh, for real?
Yeah.
And you would talk about equipment, talk about gaming chairs. And he would know the guys over at Tabuhana, and he'd be like, yeah, you know what? You look, let me talk to the guys. And it was like, he made it a point to make every connection a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
He made every point to make sure that any contact he had with anybody wasn't just for a point of business, but it was a point for life. It was a connection for life. And he checked up on these people. He talked to these people. He reached out and he was like, you know, hey, how's it going? How's this? And I felt like that was a part of why he constantly would be in that favor, if you will, of like a lot of these people, where he knew how to reach out to certain artists, how to reach out to certain, you know, celebrities, certain personalities, and it'd be an easy thing for him because his personality was just so easy to walk into. And like we were saying earlier, it just made for an easy transition to go from just first connection to friend for life kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So. I know that all of us here, we have a lot of great memories. I know it has been an emotional day for all of us here. We have been really trying to keep it together, and mind you, one thing that Curtis was always about was mental health. And he was always about, obviously, physical health as well, but he was about mental health. He's like, you know, do you, take care of you, make sure you know, you are doing the best you can do, and, you know, don't overexert yourself, don't hurt yourself, you know, be you in the best way you can, and be healthy, you know, and that was always something that he had mentioned to me, because when, oddly enough, when I met Curtis, I was going through a big shakeup in my life, and, he was a part of that in terms of like, he didn't reach out a lot, but when he did, those messages would just ring with like just positivity. Like, hey, I know you're going through it. You got this, man. You're all good. We'll see you at the next VGB meetup. You know, and it was always never with the intent of like, oh, well, you know what? You can suck it up. You're doing this. Like, everything was always with the intent of making sure that you knew that he was rooting for you,
mm-hmm.
you know, in every struggle, whether if it was a physical struggle, whether it was a mental struggle, even an emotional one, he made sure to tell you, you could do it.
Yep.
You know, and so I want to know, was there ever a time where he really showed up for you guys, you know?
I got one, just like, it was tough because I started a weight loss journey the last 3 or 4 months. It's been going real good, you know, 30 pounds.
Yeah.
You're looking good.
You're looking a little string beanie.
I'm trying to, man. And Skip was like the first one in my DM saying, let's go on a walk, you know, and then add me on Apple Watch because we could check each other's stuff. And every time I'd go on a walk, he must have got a notification because I'd get a text message saying like, good shit, man. Keep it up. Like, you're killing it. And then the ring stopped moving, you know? And I didn't think too much of it at the time. You know, I do it too. Sometimes I just go through a phase where I'm like, fuck it, I'm going to wear, you know, analog watches or something for a while.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he texts me and he kind of tells me, like, he apologized to me for, like, you know, having me add him on this thing. And he's like, I'm sorry, I ghosted you. And then he kind of shared a little bit of what he was going through. And honestly, I didn't even know how to react because I was in disbelief.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you just don't think it could happen. And what was crazy was that, like, I was getting spun out because, like, for what he's going through, and he's still had enough time to write messages to me encouraging me to continue in on the weight loss stuff. This is what he said. One of his last messages was, number one ask, stay on top of your health for yourself and your family. Make time to get those walks in. Adjust that diet. Portions of what you intake. I want to see you healthier and happier. You're one of the most determined people I know. When you set your mind to things, to achieve your goals and get the results, be that man. And it's like he's going through unthinkable stuff. He has two beautiful daughters and an incredible family, but he was so confident in where he was going and what he was going through that he was still using what energy he did have to make sure that his impact goes on forever, because I get that message and I'm not going back. Like, I have to see it through now for Skip. You know, like there's a higher purpose.
Yeah.
It's almost not just for me anymore. I don't want to disappoint him.
Yeah.
Because he had that effect. Like, you just didn't want to disappoint Skip.
Yeah.
Because he made you feel good.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I had a 2017 was a kind of a big deal for me, and I kept it under wraps, and I was going through the ringer, and I'm like, look, I'd been going through therapy. I had been finding out exactly where I needed to be. Like, there was always the conversation about, you know, how are you doing on your mental health? And he was always the first person to ask you, but he would never tell you how he was doing because the focus always needed to be on you. And when you dig in, and he's part of the reason in tandem with therapy that I was okay to go, look, this is what I need from you, and I need you to understand this. And I was having a really crappy day, and I turned it into, of course, an Instagram post, because why not? But he said, you are intelligent, you are strong, you are wise, you are strong-willed, and you have the ability to persist. You possess everything you need to overcome this. So I encourage you, overcome. And I look at it, and mind you, I, of course, affixed it to a picture of Alana from Saga. So go comic books. But I see that, and I'm like, every single time I need a pick-me-up, and I'm like, I don't know if I can do this, that always comes back. It always comes to the forefront that I have everything I need to persist, and I can overcome. And there was somebody that was just like, I encourage you. I was like, I need encouragement. And he's like, I encourage you. Overcome. It wasn't it's going to be okay. It was, take stock of what you have. I see what you have in your arsenal. I know what you can do. Do it. And that's one of those things. It's like, where did that come from?
Yeah.
That there was a lifetime that Kurt found and saw other people and was like, you have the toolkit. You have the ability. You can do this. Let's go.
A lot of people don't even get messages like that from their own family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he was giving that out to people he felt needed it and that affected him. Like, it's inspirational. Like, my wife was talking, crying in the car on the way home and was just like, man, I hope at my funeral people talk about me in half the positive light and have stories half as compelling to share.
Yeah.
And it's true. Like, you lose track of people. Like, I'm so caught up in work, or I'm so caught up with this or that. You know, I don't have time to message three people, let alone the hundreds, apparently, that Curtis was messaging and encouraging.
Across the U.S., all over the place.
So, I have in talking about therapy. Something I've been working on now that I've been in therapy is that I have a tendency, which you guys are well aware of this.
Yes.
When there's any sort of stutter in a relationship, I'm the first to let it go and never reach out and let it die. And then I look back and I regret, and 'cause the last message I have from Curtis is when he quit the podcast. That's the last time I talked to him. And it was, you talk about being so selfless. It was it was him making sure that we were good. He was like, oh, here's the equipment. Here's the passwords. Like, you let me know you need any help with the setup. And I asked him why he left, and he explained it. And I was like, it makes total sense. And I tried to take accountability for the part that was mine. And then I do that thing that I do where I'm just like, you talk about feeling like you have to compete. I have this bad habit of, I'm like, okay, I'm going to snooze them on social media for a little while just because it's raw. It sucks. I get jealous. I get envious. And a snooze turns into a mute, turns into a, not even realizing that I may have unfollowed. And luckily I did not unfollow Curtis, but I just, the algorithm says, okay, well, you're not interacting with this person anymore. You don't want to see them much. And you don't even fucking realize that, okay, that's been a year. It's been another year. That's been COVID. And all of a sudden it's 4 years. And the last thing was Ian McKellen, Magneto, tipping the hat, And he's all, good old Eric. And then I didn't see him and I didn't talk to him. And there was no ill will, but it just, yeah. I was like, okay, it's a little too new. I'm going to take a step back. And then I saw all the things he was doing and with VGB and with his streams. And I was like, he's just a beautiful person. And I knew he was going to do amazing things. And there's always part of me, it's like, all right, cool. Yeah. Well, once things, we figured things out with COVID and all that, like, we'll get back together. We'll do another K-Plus Crusaders. Like, we'll get him on the mic instead of behind the camera so he doesn't feel like he has to bear the weight of that, because he felt like he did say that the end of Crusaders was more stressful than his marriage. And I felt so bad mm-hmm. that he ever felt that. Mm-hmm. And I look back and I'm like, oh, yeah, we got time. Yeah. We got time. And then I think about all the conversations he and I had about fatherhood and the way, the relationship he had with his daughters. And I was like, if I could be half the dad Absolutely. That he was. And then I look back and I'm like, he maybe met Morgan when she was a baby. And then again, COVID and everything else, he never met Alden. He didn't meet Emily. Mm-hmm. And it's just, like I said, I'm so good at letting those relationships die. And he was just one of those people that he was at the top of the list of, if I was going to make a fucking effort, I would have gone back to him. And then he's the one that's gone. And it's just...
Just knowing the Curtis I know, though, like, he would be pleased if that's the reason that you maybe reach out to that second person.
Yeah.
And that third person.
When his mom said that today, I was like, I got a list. I got people that I got to talk to.
Yeah.
Because it's just 38 fucking years old. Like, mm-hmm.
That was the part that spun me, too. Because, like, as a dad, too, I got three as well. And that was never a fear. Dying was never a fear of mine until I had kids.
Yep. Yeah.
It hits you like a ton of bricks, where like anytime you get a sneeze or a little mm-hmm. flutter in your chest, you're like, oh, fuck, I'm dead. My kids are going to, mm-hmm. And so that's honestly one of my biggest fears. And the fact that it happened to such an amazing person was just like a knife through the heart. Yeah. But again, like, I don't know. And I don't care what your religious beliefs are if you're listening to this, but because I know what Curtis's were. And if you had to tell me today, heaven and hell are real, you go up or you go down. And I had to think of everybody in my head, everybody I know.
Yeah.
Who are you for sure is going up?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Curtis is going up. Who impacted more lives in 38 years than people I know, that a lot of 50-year-olds, 60-year-olds, 70-year-olds, 80-year-olds ever? Curtis. Yeah. I'm sorry to get religious on you guys, but if God needs soldiers, he pulled his best one off the bench. And I fucking mean that. That's the solace I have in knowing Curtis was taken, because he would have volunteered.
Yeah.
He was so adamant in his faith.
Yeah. And the crazy thing is that, because for a lot of us here, we have a background in religion, and some of us, we've either walked away from it, we've laxed on it, we've pushed it to the side. There are, I was in ministry for a long, long time, and I've met a lot of leaders in churches. I've met a lot of pastors. I've met a lot of people proclaiming to embody the Christ-like mentality. And Curtis embodied it more than the hundreds of pastors that I had ever met. Mm-hmm. A lot of the leaders who claim to do God's work. Mm-hmm. I can honestly say that there were people in churches that I would be worried about going up to because of the way that they would handle, like, oh, you sinned or you did this. Oh, we got to shun you, or we got to, you know, you got to go and do this. So you got to work to get your graces back with God. And every conversation with him regarding faith was never a, well, you're on that side of the tracks and I'm on this side. It was always, you know, hey, get back up. You know, you're good. You know, God is good. And it was a surprise. Not
he showed.
Yeah.
He led with the actions.
Yeah. Yeah.
I never heard him tell anybody he was a Christian.
No, not at all.
But through his generosity and people he knew were far off of his belief system, mm-hmm. he would give them comic books, mm-hmm. just like he would give us comic books.
Yeah.
And he would not just give a comic book, like he would listen to your story, figure something out, like whether you like a certain aesthetic,
yeah.
or it could be a situation you're going through in your life. And if you read that book and really read it,
mm-hmm.
Curtis is telling you something.
No.
He would talk to you through yeah. art.
And he would give it to you, and then he would follow up with it. Like, hey, did you read it? I got a few messages from like stuff that he would talk about on the show. It'd be like, hey, you know, after the show, be like, hey, did you read, you know, have you read this one? Or have you checked out this? We were talking about a certain aesthetic of a book or whatever. He goes, hey, you should check out so-and-so. I go, okay, I'll check it out. I'll go to the comic book store. He goes, okay, all right, cool. And it would be like a week or two, and I get a message, hey, did you get that book? Did you read it? And I'm like, oh, I'll get it this time. I'll get this. All right, man. Well, let me know as soon as you get it, because I want to talk about it.
That's Steve's is literally like, that was you, 100.
I have three books right now.
Easily.
One that I've read, which was East of West Volume 1 back yep. then. He gave me two others to read that I promise I will have a report ready for him when I've read them. Because of both of myself and, you know, the job I have, I am constantly on my phone. And there are moments at night where you'd think I'd be on Instagram or on Facebook, and what I'm doing is I'm texting Curtis because we're both talking about whatever movie, whatever TV show, whatever book. And it would turn into things that we wanted to write and sharing those ideas we had. I mean, I looked through just now on my phone, and there's texts that are like maybe 4 feet long of just him putting a synopsis down and what his ideas were.
Yeah.
How hyped he was when I found a story, a biography that I want to write into a screenplay, and how hyped because he knows the person, he knows who it is, and he's known him before, and he wants to help me with it. He wants to give me notes. He wants to write with me. He then breaks down this story he's had in his brain for years, and how I would return the favor writing with him. And that became like conversations we had, you know, up until recently was text about, up until when we DJ'd and MC'd my sister-in-law's wedding. When we were putting things away, we're both talking about the two things we want to write together. And the collaboration that was there that he wanted to have, and there just was never enough time to make it happen. Time got in the way. Yeah. Life got in the way. And I've said it all day today, and I'm saying it here. I promise you, Curtis, I'm going to write that stuff. I'm going to write it. I am going to visit your family and ask if no one else is doing anything with his ideas, if I can try to at least match half of the creative genius you had with these ideas. I would love to be the one to bring your thoughts to the level that there wasn't enough time for you to do. I mean, if someone else is already planning to do it, please do it. But if no one is planning on anything with what he had planned, I would be happy to take those on, because that was a genius that needs to be heard or seen.
It was pretty incredible, too. He was in his most recent musical endeavor, the audio visual department.
Yeah.
He was talking about that
He was really into it. And he, I guess, was duoing up with the guy. What was crazy, too, is that there's a lot of people who I would hear stories about. I'm terrible with names. The guy from Thrasher.
Mike.
He told me tons of stories about them. I feel like I know you guys because he talked about you guys a ton too, which is crazy to me, Doc, because like I would have never known because the way he talked about all of you guys was I had no idea there was any type of ill will because he never spoke an ill word of any of you guys. I'd be shit talking my former co-host up and down. Because I've just gotten out of a breakup too, you know. So, but I
think
was
we've all done that. So.
I was a jilted lover, but I didn't know. I just thought he'd walked away or was you know exploring different things because he loved you guys and he. So that was really news to me, and I think just a testament to he didn't hold no grudges.
No, before that, when the last message was, I still got love for y'all. That was always. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's so Curtis. Yeah. I still got love for y'all. Yeah,
there are I literally have where it's just he and I trading Tony Stark and Rhodey gifts back and forth to each other. That's all it is. Yeah. There's no talking. It's just Tony and Rhodey back and forth.
But the you know the his musical partner of that project reached out to the record labels that he knew Skip was a fan of, and one of them actually agreed to press on vinyl their most recent EP.
Yeah. Mm.
That's fucking incredible.
Yeah.
And when that comes out, I don't know. We gotta
get that pre-order
shit around.
Link. Yeah. Because I know as soon as we get that pre-order link, I'm going to post it on every social media page that I have to get it out there because it deserves to be heard. He talked at length about not only music in general and the music he loved, but the music he made and the beats that he had created
was good at it.
He was really good at it. Surprisingly, you think kind of like had Doc had mentioned, it's difficult to find somebody who is a jack of all trades and a master of all trades as well. And you know, okay, he knows comic books. Great. He knows movies. Hell, he knows, you know, all the video games. He knows sports.
Street Fighter.
You know, and then to top it off, because Corey and I were musicians, he's also a musician and he creates stuff. And I'm like, damn, really? And so at first, I remember the first time he had mentioned that, I'm like, okay, yeah, you dabble. Cool. Whatever. This is Sacramento. There's at least, you throw a stone, you're going to hit somebody who
played alto saxophone. That's dabbling.
Exactly. Yeah, but then he shows up and he shows what he's done. And it's like, damn, that's good. Mm-hmm. And people needed to hear that. People need to know that. People need to know that side of him as well. And one thing I wanted to say as well is like, we are of that millennial generation. And as we're getting to that point where we're realizing, you know, life is fragile. Life is, you know, we're not immortal. And I know for a time, a lot of us here carry that, like you guys were mentioning, you know, before you had kids, you know, just whatever, do this, that. But realizing it now, I think I know for myself, I could have done more as a friend. He never had, there was never any like ill intent when coming to like conversations with them in terms of like, oh, well, you're doing this or whatever, you know, blah, blah, blah. Well, I'm going to do it better. The kind of thing. It was always like, you know, hey, how's this going? How's your podcast going? How's these things going? How's work going? How's this? And it was always like, you know, oh, he's doing well, but he wants to know that you're doing well too. Mm-hmm. And, it's one of those things you want to be known for. You know, I want to be known for. I was sitting there listening to the service today, and I was looking at the line of folks that would come up, and in my mind, I'm like, if the entire world knew that we lost Skip, how many more people would have showed up to say something about him? If money was no option and people could make it, I have no doubt that we would have probably packed out, you know, the basketball arena downtown. Mm-hmm. Like it would have been easily, because everybody has these moments where he has touched lives and he has made an impact. I mean, I was thinking just alone, like all the people that he knew from his interactions over with the Kings and the Kingsguard, and every fan that he interacted with, everybody that he made a point to become connected with. I know he followed up with these people. I know he made intentions to make them a part of the bigger celebration of everything that was going on with the Kings. When it came to video games, when it came to comic books, like, he wanted people to know not his knowledge of the comic books, but he wanted them to know what was great about the comic mm-hmm. books. It was never a, let me flex my muscles and show you what I can do. It was, let me show you the beauty and the wonder of music, the beauty and wonder of comic books, the beauty and wonder of film, the beauty and wonder and the artistry in video games. And he would put it on display for you to show you that this is something that anybody can jump into. You don't have to be a nerd. You don't have to be this. You don't have to be that. You could just love it and be okay with that. And yeah.
When we worked at Apple, there was a big thing that the corporate, you know, entity pushed, is that it wasn't about tech specs. It wasn't about hardware. It wasn't about, you know, gigabyte, you know, megabyte. It wasn't about that. It was, what can you do with this? And Curtis is one of those people that he wasn't going to tell you, you know, the frames per second kind of thing, the refresh. He didn't care about, like, the mm-hmm. hardware. He knew it. Of course he knew it. He was brilliant. But he was like, let's talk about the memories you're going to make with your family doing this, with your phone, with your, you know, doing these videos, like using the different the intro apps that are super basic that anyone can grasp versus the next level stuff. Like, he was all about what you could do with that thing. And it wasn't about, you know, sometimes it was showcasing what he could do.
Yeah.
Just to teach you that you could do the same thing. Mm-hmm. It was, hey, you know, here's how you, because I talked to him about recording music, and because I had been out of it for a long time. And when it was, again, just one of those things, like you say, like, as soon as he's like, hey, man, like, I'm interested in this, he's like, cool. Here's not a mansplain. It's a, here is just welcome to another fucking room in my house of wonders. Yeah. And we're just going to, like, we're going to talk. And it's such a, you know, an interesting feeling, because he can always find a way to connect. Because I would talk to him about these, like, well, what are you trying to do? And I would kind of explain what I was feeling. And I was like, oh, well, he's not going to want to help me make a new fucking death metal side yeah. project. And of course he did. Yeah. Like, of course he's like, yeah. He's like, oh, yeah. And we started comparing. And then we worked through the musical trees until we found those branches that connected. We're like, okay, of course we have, like, a super hardcore punk background. Like, he was a skater. Yeah. Dude. Yeah. Like, of course we have that. And then we would go and he would show me these things and we would talk about these things. And I'd just go through these playlists that I have and I just shuffle them and I'm like, oh fuck, that was Curtis. Of course, like mm-hmm. I didn't listen to A Tribe Called Quest until I met Curtis. Mm-hmm. You know, like, all this weird, like, synth wave stuff that yeah. blew up because of Stranger Things. Like, mm-hmm. me and Curtis, like, we were there, you know, before Stranger Things. He's like, oh, check out this dude, he's French. It's exactly. a concept album, Kavinsky. And it's like, oh yeah, this is Coda Red Twins. Car. Yeah,
Coda Twins. The Babel music, and you're like, this shouldn't make sense. Yeah. And it's literally, it's almost garble. Like, they're singing and it's nonsensical, but you're like, oh shoot,
this is beautiful. This is and beautiful. Explains why it's beautiful.
Yeah, and you're like, that shouldn't be good. And it's good.
So it's like, whatever you wanted to do, like, whatever you wanted to get out of something, he wanted to help you get it out of there. Whether it was hardware, software, like talking to someone, whether it was a connection, whether it was creating something, whether it was experiencing something. He's like, what do you want to get out of this? Do you want to make money off of this? Do you want to just enjoy this? Like, do you want this to be a hustle? Do you want it to just be a hobby? Like, let's do that. Let's get there. And he was always willing to help, like, just everything. Like, I can't think of a single thing where Curtis was not, he never said no.
Nope.
He never said no. The only thing he didn't do was ask for help.
Yeah.
God, he was bad at asking for help.
Perfectionist to the end.
He was just, exactly. And because, like, I think about, like, when it came to, like, carrying equipment, when it came to plugging,
with his bum knee, he's like, no, I got it.
And yeah,
like,
no. Can I carry something? How about the case that's impenetrable? Can I carry that? I'm not going to break it. I promise.
Please? Yeah. Can I get it?
I made him let me unload his speakers.
Can I bring an extension cord? Yeah. Can I carry the extension cord, Curtis?
Yes. Like, can I put in the XLR cable? Can I just roll it? I can lay it out. Yeah. I swear, it was. He would teach you, but when you were there, you would never be able. And I said it today. It was like, he would teach you. You would know how to do it. But while he was there, you weren't allowed to use those skills. Yeah. He's like, I know you know, but no, you do not do this.
No.
And it's the blessing and the curse of seeing Grace and Vicky, which they would come to our live shows because they were there. And so they were literally there from, what, like 5:30, 6 o'clock until midnight some nights when we were doing this, because we would be setting up. Nobody was allowed to do things. He's like, oh, shoot, I need to go to Guitar Center. And he'd have the girls. And I talked to Vicky so much, and Grace would just sit in the corner and was just like, I'm not here for this. And
Vicky's him.
Yeah, Vicky.
She's him.
She, it was so great to see. Grace has his stubbornness, and she talked about it today. Mm-hmm. But Vicky was like, Dad, I'm bored. What can I do? He's like, there's comic books. There's stuff to read. What are you doing? She's like, no, you're going to make me write about it. I don't want to.
I joked with Vicky today about, listen, since I was the Iron Man to your dad, I do have a character that I think would connect with me and that you might like. Her name's Riri. It's yeah. Ironheart. I think you should. And she literally snapped back saying, do you want a 3 to 4 paragraph report yeah. too? Because if I have to, fine. I'm like, I could be his substitute. I mean, I could accept that.
Yeah. And I think that was the worst thing today for me.
Cool. That was rough.
That was tough.
I hadn't seen them since they were the age of my littlest.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew, like, I had known those girls then. And the fact that he had kept it from them, that Vicky's like, I wanted to go give him a card and spend time with him on Father's Day. And Grandma's like, nope, he's in surgery. And I was like, that wrecked me, because I don't know when they said goodbye. And they are brilliant. He loved them so fiercely. He was so proud of them. He literally was like, these are my girls. Mm-hmm. And he poured into them and loved on them. And he was always, I found it so funny, he was always about those words of encouragement to those girls. And I'm like, now they get to see it and they get it. But sitting there listening to Vicky do a play-by-play,
the writer that she is,
And she wanted people to know that he had tried to shield them,
mm-hmm.
that he was always going to be there. And Vicky's the littlest,
mm-hmm.
and she's got this, like, I'm going to fight. I'm going to be there. I'm going to show up. And the running theme of he was my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that there wasn't a question about it when it came to his girls. There's a picture up there next to Curtis of him in a movie at the Regal Cinema in Thomas, and one of them on each side. And I remember the day he took that picture because he sent it to all the Crusaders.
Mm-hmm.
It was a movie we were supposed to be reviewing. And he took the picture. And I remember I had ended up posting it for Father's Day on our Instagram a long time ago. And I was like, these can't be the same kids. This can't be the same moment. And it wrecked me so bad. And we're sitting in there, and like, I'm the oldest Crusader. I'm the Crusader with the oldest kid. And all the babies that came through and got to see Curtis be a dad. And I just, there's something about him, man.
He's a great dad.
When we started that podcast in his living room of his apartment,
with shoe boxes
and mic stands, and those two little girls would be there, to then see how they are today at that podium, shows you the father Curtis is. Because then, I mean, you just say, Vicky is her dad. She wrote all that. She spoke it. She stood in front of all of us. Some of us she knew, some of us she didn't. It just speaks volumes to who he was and how those two are going to continue in their way what he was. I'm not saying they're going to copy their dad. They're going to be their own version.
No.
But they're going to have their dad's energy behind whatever it is they do.
Yeah.
And you see that today. And just again, they were little tykes when we first saw them.
Yeah.
And now look at them.
And the fact that they were coming in and Vicky saw all of us in that pew. Mm-hmm. She saw Tom, Steve, Zach, Corey, Elizabeth. She saw everybody. Literally, it was a lineup of King's Gear and Super T's. And she smiled. Mm-hmm. And it was like, those are my dad's people. They're not here out of obligation. Those are my dad's people. And like I told her after, I was like, when you're ready, you let us know. You want to talk comics? You want to talk video games? Whatever you do, I was like, you reach out. You know where we are. We're here.
Without a doubt.
And yeah. I know she will. But I just, it was like, it was literally like a kid seeing somebody they hadn't seen in a long time and getting excited. Like, those guys know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he really was something else. And,
you ever seen him do the bird?
The what?
The bird. Yeah, Steve's nose.
Do we want to elaborate on what the bird is?
Is that a me do it or you do it, Steve's?
You do it.
Have you ever seen this, Corey?
No.
I have no idea.
So, didn't really see him dance, right? He had a little bit of a shuffle. He loved Prince, but he'd go and tell you about Morris Day and the Time.
Oh, that bird.
The bird.
Yeah, me and him. Okay, I didn't know that. Yeah.
So Morris Day and the Times were coming to the Crest. And mind you, at this time I had kind of known him. And he's like, I was downtown working at Oblivion. And he's like, hey, I'm going to go see Morris Day and the Times at the Crest. Come through. And I was like, I'm working. And it's literally like right around the corner. And I went in and it timed it so weird that literally walked in and they had just finished Jungle Love. Mind you, I did. I was like, and we're like walking in. I don't know how the heck there was an extra ticket or whatnot. And people, they start the bird and everybody is losing their mind in the Crest. And he starts doing the dance up the aisle to the seat. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. I don't know where I am. And I swear, I saw him dance and he was, again, laughing, the biggest grin on his face. And he always talked about how Prince and music would bring people together and the importance of Morris Day and the Times and that song. And literally he was like, squawk! And he was like,
the look on his face at that wedding when I reminded him that, hey, by the way, Megan's husband, he and his boys, his crew, they're all from the Bay. And he's like, they're from the Bay? I'm like, they're from the Bay. So we had it planned out, and it was meant to be corny dad or just over-the-top exaggeration where I'm like, at around 8:45, 9 o'clock at night of the wedding, I just look at Curtis on the microphone, and I go, Curtis, I think we have to tell him where to go. And he goes, you mean tell them where to go? Well, we should tell them where to go. He goes, okay. And he lets the beat drop and all these Bay Area guys, oh, come out to the dance floor. And Curtis's big smile like, yeah, okay, there it is.
That's the community thing too, because he was like an encyclopedia for Bay Area music.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like there was artists and groups who were, you know, minuscule on the spectrum of music in total, but he would just light you up with factoids about collaborations and artists from the Bay Area because it was his home.
Mm-hmm.
He grew up in that area and he cared.
We would talk about hyphy music because it would like I was in Vacaville,
mm-hmm.
but our area code is 707. And if you saw those Yay Area hats, 707 was on it. Now, to be fair, that was for Vallejo, but
whatever.
We were like, we're from the Yay. But like all those acts would come through and like there'd be these underground shows and like all these different artists that like I saw maybe once, you know, because when a show came through our town, it's like, okay, cool. Everyone's going, like, doesn't matter what genre it is because it's like it's a Friday night. What the hell else are we going to do in Vacaville? Mm-hmm. Bowl. Like, yeah. So we would go, except they had concerts at the bowling alley sometimes. So that was fun. But I would go to all these shows and we would talk about like hyphy music. And it started, you know, with the E40s and all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we would just start going down this rabbit hole. And I'm like, oh, you know, and he's like, yeah, of course I need. And he'd have it. Like, he'd have like he'd have like, it may have even been like a tape at one point or like a burned CD. Mm-hmm. There was this random Bay Area like underground. I was like, how do you know all this? And it's just encyclopedia of everything.
That was probably his lineup for the wedding too. What he played was right there. That's what it was. Yeah.
Digitized everything and put it all in.
Yep. Yeah. We did the Fizzle Dance a little bit. A little bit.
Oh my gosh.
I want to go around and I know we've already had a couple of great stories and so forth. And so wrapping this whole thing up, because, you know, obviously we can go for hours and continue talking about them, but I you know, want to make sure that we all still get home on time, because as we stated, 90% of the table here has kids. So 95.
Mine are asleep. Let's go all week.
So this Mine is part aren't. One. We're going to do it. But I kind of want to leave this conversation off with final words, whether if it's, you know, what you would say to him, the last statement you would say to him, or what you want to say to his family, or just what you want to give as a final takeaway for Curtis as a part of your life and what it meant. I want to give us a chance to, because the truth of the matter is that even though we were all a part of his life, this loss was sudden and it was scary and it was quick. And we didn't get a chance to do those final goodbyes, unfortunately. So I want to leave this open to you guys. If you guys have that within you, you know, the floor is yours.
I think we speak for everyone here when we say to his mother, Sherita, mm-hmm. his girls, Vicky and Grace, we are here for you no matter what you need. Curtis, your family is in good hands, even if not even talking about the people at this table. Everyone who was at the celebration of life, everyone who was at Sherita's house when we were all there, they are in extremely good hands and they are beautiful. And I'm going to take with me a word that Curtis shared with me that came from a Denzel Washington speech. And he always reminded me whenever I felt like I was done writing, I just can't do this anymore, I'm done, whatever. He would remind me that the most important thing isn't so much talent, it's consistency. Mm. And he would show me the Denzel video where Denzel says that word repeatedly. When you are consistent, that's when it happens. And Curtis will say the same thing to me. Consistency. Don't stop writing. Keep going. And Curtis, I have a reason to keep going.
I think I'm going to swipe this one from Doc. But Tom actually came through today, and he's one of the originals. He actually sent us a message mm-hmm. with the request that if we have time to read it in his stead. Mm-hmm. And he says, as much as I wanted to say something during the service, Mike and Steve's said what I think covered everything that would be important to me said there. Beyond that, the presence of being in the same space and time of the many, many lives Curtis touched, I was humbled to not be his oldest friend nor his best friend, but he made you feel like you were that the friend that mattered when he was with you. Despite everything that life and the world we live in throws at us, he never felt like he was running low on good faith in his fellow human. He showed me what it really meant to pour out of his cup through abundance and not lack. A younger man would be jealous of how easy he made navigating through difficult times and situations looked, but where I stand, it's just inspiring. Always and forever, cutting the check for Curtis Fisher, a.k.a. Existential Romeo.
Cut the check.
Cut the check.
Cut the check.
We're taking that from you, Mackie. Sorry.
And I think for me, as that was Tom, the last thing he actually ever wrote to me was he had loaned me his Mac Mini ages and ages ago. And I sing, not best, but I had recorded some stuff. And after we had finished up and I had gotten my own gear and everything, I gave back the Mac Mini and he said, hey, I was scrubbing down the Mac Mini and I found some files of you singing. I cleaned it up and you sound good. When you want it, let me know. I'll send it your way. And I was like, that's great. Thanks. And I had sent it too late. But Kurt, you were a really complex human. And you always liked to turn it, the light on everybody else. And the people that knew you best knew that you were stubborn. You hated drama. But you also cared deeply and in a way that nobody ever expected you to. You will be missed. Vicky, Grace, Miss Sherita, we are here when you need us and even when you don't. And thank you for giving us the opportunity to be a part of your dad and your son's sphere light, even for the few moments that we had.
Okay.
Whew.
I wanted to talk today, but I couldn't. And I've been thinking since we got the call initially, I was like, okay, what fucking Batman quote am I going to bust out for his? Because I'm not going to write some, like, you know, some schmarmy and too many Batman lines or, you know, just, you know, you don't have to, you never need to. Just hey, one-liners.
Whoa, I did
just,
the fail.
Just, there was a quote. It was one of those times where I was like, can I even use this quote? Because I never read this book. It's not like it means something to me. It's not like we connected over this book. But I found a Batman quote and I was like, this is like, I have to, and I didn't know when or where, but it's from JLA 72 from 2002, and it was Batman who said this, and there was a prophecy about death, and Batman said, "We die every day, 1,000 times an hour. Anyone who does this work sees it. Death, their own, their partners, their loved ones. We go to work anyway. Death is powerless against you if you leave a legacy of good behind. Death is powerless against you if you do your job. My father saved the lives of over 4,000 people one at a time with his bare hands and his mind. Death was with him the entire time." Mm. And I was just like, you know what? I went back to that first episode of the podcast and when he's, who's your favorite? You know, who's your favorite? And he had to see Batman.
Mm.
Batman, the detective, the one who has a plan for everything, the one who thinks everything through. Of course it's his favorite
character. Of course it is.
It's fucking him. Yeah. It's him, you know, minus being a billionaire.
Yeah.
of course. But it's still, it was always him.
I truly don't even know what to say, you know, like still processing it in real time a little bit. So I don't know, like, I'm thankful that, you know, there's hours of Curtis content in the world, you know, and I'm thinking back to episodes that we did, one in particular of, we had a full agenda of stuff, but someone didn't show up or whatever. Mm. And we just went live and legit talked about Prince video game bang. But the episode is front to bottom, just Curtis spitting facts about Prince.
Do you know what episode number that was?
I don't.
Okay.
But it's, I'm going to go find it and listen to it for me, you know? And his most recent project, the audio video department, that album is a concept album. It's 5 tracks, no words, but it tells a story.
Mm.
And I would say it's his last great polished piece that he put out. And I'm going to go listen to it again tonight. And I encourage everybody to listen to it and just let Curtis talk to you through it. Because he didn't put things out to put things out.
Nope.
He didn't create content for content. He created it with a point to educate, to teach you something. And that album was great. I listened to it when he gave it to me. Yeah, he sent it to me ahead of time just to gauge my thing. And I was like, dude, you're telling a story here. Yeah. And I got tickets to a Kings game. And I didn't even think to ask my wife. my boss was a former owner of the Kings. So he sent me some bomb tickets. And I just texted Curtis immediately. I was like, yo, what are you doing? You want to go see LeBron's last game in SAC? And he was like, oh, I fucking hate LeBron. Or he didn't say, but, you know, he didn't say fucking, because that's my paraphrase. He was nicer than that. But he was like, I hate LeBron. But I'll go with you. So, my wife's pissed. You didn't even ask me. But we had a chance to, you know, hotbox the car afterwards and just talk about his album. And I gave him my... I was a fan of Curtis. Like, I was his friend, but I was really a fan because I love people like him. And you don't find many on top of, you know, the quality, you know, his fat passions and stuff. Like, he was an artist, mm-hmm. and he loved artists. Hickman, Prince, like, he picked people that he liked and he dug deep in mm-hmm. on them mm-hmm. and he applied them to his art. And like I said, this last audio, it's called It All Felt So Real. Please listen to it. And just let Curtis talk to you. And if you miss him and you want to hear that laugh, go listen to the Capeless Crusaders. Yeah. His Twitch channel, Skip and Tosh, is still alive, and there's VODs on there. He left a legacy and an incredible body of work. Yeah. And he touched a lot of people's hearts along the way. Yeah. That's what I'd want to say. And Skip, your fun was much funner than my fun. I will admit it.
Yeah.
I was having a hard time finding the album, and I was like, he better put it on Apple Music. He didn't just put it on Spotify, that son of a bitch.
No, it's on SoundCloud.
No, I found it because I didn't put the slash in there, because that was, yeah.
It's so good. It's so good. And I swear, this is what I'll do for Skip. I'll make a vow. I'm not going to listen to another Black Eyed Peas song for the rest of my life. If there's one thing, Curtis loved a lot of people. Yeah. He had love for all of us.
Uh-huh. Yeah. We know that
but
story.
But not Fergie Ferg.
We know that story.
Apples out. No.
I was actually waiting for somebody to bring that up, too.
I thought about driving back from a convention. He told it to because I had never heard mm-hmm. it. And he told me, he explained it to me when we were driving the car. We listened to all kinds of music. And then he's like, did I ever tell you why I don't like the Black Eyed Peas? I'm like, no, let's have it. And he explained it all to me, and I was just like, that was the craziest story. Because I'm like, you're just a guy that works at the mall with me, and we mm-hmm. talk about comic books. Like, I'm sorry, you had a career butting heads with corporate lawyers and friggin' Will.i.am. Like,
yeah,
he like lived like 16 lives.
Fuck the Black Eyed Peas.
In 4 years. Like, god damn. Uh-huh. Which made me feel bad because we definitely played tonight's gonna be a good night at my wedding, and he was there at my wedding, and I had no idea. I was looking back, I'm like, oh man, maybe that's why he wore a hoodie at my wedding. Maybe that's
there you go.
But I wore sandals, you know, today. So
yeah, so I know we're even there.
Yep. To say that the community here in Sacramento lost a big part of it is completely understating it. The fact that people far and wide, people from all over the U.S. that knew about the situation and knew about today's celebration, they made the effort to be here. But like I said, I can't even quantify how many people he has truly touched, because if it was indicative of how he was with some of the least of these that were here, I can imagine how he touched just the people he truly gave his time and attention to. I don't doubt that he kept up with hundreds of people as often as he could, as much as he could. And so, a big voice here in Sacramento will be missed. A screaming, stark, raving fan for the Kings will be missed. A father and a son will be missed.
Hold on, one more thing.
Yeah.
How crazy is it that he lived through to see the end of the drought?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. I had that thought the other day.
Oh,
the Kings hadn't been through a playoff in 2 decades.
Yeah.
And Skip got to see his team make it. And I asked him, too. I was like, why aren't you podcasting this? This is like the season to mm-hmm. be a podcaster for the Kings. Because he podcasted all mm-hmm. through their shitty seasons.
Yep.
And then the season they go to the playoffs, he doesn't. And he was like, I just want to enjoy this as a fan.
Yeah.
Like, that was his reason. Like, he was just enjoying it so much that he didn't feel like he needed to.
Yeah, he did the first game. That was when he was in April. he was on that first episode and then he didn't do anything else. And I was like, what's going on? And then that makes 100.
Sacktown breakdown.
Yeah. Yep, there it is.
So you will be missed, Curtis. And we want you to know that we love you. We will continue to love you and your family. And we will, by your example, continue to be the community. Not just be a part of it, but be the community that you so strongly held up. And yeah, I feel like there are so many life lessons in the short amount of time that, and I say short because it's never long enough, in the short amount of time that we've known you, and we're going to take them to heart, and we're going to grow, and we're going to be better. So, but yeah, this was our opportunity to, like I said, really highlight and tribute this man, and be able to let you know, as a listener, if this is the first time you're hearing about Curtis, or this is the millionth time, know that he was probably the best of us all. So, of course, you can check out all of his previous content. He has a Twitter page. He's got a Twitch page. He's got episodes on the VGB Twitch channel as well. We're going to be putting out the VGB stream out there to put it out there. So if you want to go and revisit those as well, as well as Capeless Crusaders, you can check out all those episodes. Did he do any Nerd On?
No,
he was not part of Nerd On. But everything that he did with us is still on YouTube. The VODs are still on Twitch. And all our episodes back to episode one, where he was there doing sheep sounds. And
that's right.
It took 3 weeks to edit one episode because we swore so much. And all the way back, it's all there.
And if you want to hear him in particular, he is under Skip and Tosh at SoundCloud, where you can get some very... a literal decade of him singing, playing, a whole bunch of stuff.
He's out there, and like Corey so eloquently put, the great thing about the digital age that we live in is that we can continue to bring him back and relive those moments with him and share those memories and share his art and his passion through those avenues. And so we'll be making an attempt to really push out a lot of those links. So, but yeah, we love you, Curtis, and until next time.